These are Bora Voices.
Hello, this is Chuck McHenry, host of the Bora Broadcast. It is unbelievably April 2024, and we had to reawaken this podcast a little bit, get it going here in the posh studio inside the old audiovisual closet at Bora High School in lovely Boise, Idaho. And I have with me today government teacher Corinne Rue. Is just going to talk a little bit about her position as a government teacher in the midst of this political climate that we're in right now and what that's like. So Corinne, go ahead and introduce yourself. How many years have you been teaching here now?
Oh, you're going to make me, I don't teach math. I teach government in the AP government class, but thank you for having me, Mr. McHenry. Let's see, I have been here since 2007, so we have to do the math. How long has that been now? Is that like my 18th year, I think, here? Something like that.
That sounds right.
18 years.
I think you're finishing up your 17th year,
okay,
maybe?
17th year. 20 years teaching because I worked over at Meridian High.
Oh, okay. We'll give
it to you. And, of course, you know, I'm a Bora grad, so I feel like I never left.
Right.
Yeah.
You've been home for a long time.
A long time.
That's good.
Yes.
You teach AP government?
Teach AP government and some regular government as well.
Okay. And I was thinking the other day when I was watching the news, which I do less and less now because it's shockingly depressing, that it must be hard for a high school, public high school, American, U.S. government teacher to sort of, I don't know, walk that razor's edge a little bit in class when so much is swirling around politically. What, just give me a story. Like, what is that, what does that feel like in the classroom?
Well, I would say that it's really been kind of an evolution over the last, 10 years almost. And, I mean, it's hard not to talk about the change that happened in the 2016 election when President Trump, then candidate, declaring himself a candidate, Trump, announced his run, which no one really took seriously at the time. Right. Everybody thought, he was just this celebrity guy that had, a show.
Weren't there like 15...
I think at one time there was 19 in that year, and everybody just sort of assumed he was, just kind of doing it for ratings, and the Democratic side was pretty locked in with Hillary winning, and then, of course, if you haven't seen the end of the movie, I don't want to spoil it, but he, wins the election in 2016, I really think even to his own surprise. And really, as a candidate, he was, and then, later as president, really trying to upend the norms, which is what he ran on.
Right.
And it changed kind of the trajectory of politics and sort of the systems and structures of government. Then, we had his administration was a little bit different, that started to create some new challenges than COVID. Than a very contentious 2020 election. So that whole kind of trajectory of sort of out with the old, out with anything that's normal and standard of talking about politics and discussing politics was definitely driven by President Trump. And that's the thing, even like talking about it, I choose my words very carefully because right. I'm not trying to say it's a positive thing or a negative thing. It's just a thing. But he gave permission to speak about political adversaries in a negative way. He gave permission to that, and I'm not, it probably always existed, but there was something that probably our young student viewers, or I don't know if they're viewers, obviously not viewers, listeners, is that term political correctness that was very popular in the 90s. Are you being politically correct? Definitely is gone out the window. It's like, we don't worry about political correctness anymore. It's right. About just stating your opinion, stating your feelings.
And it became sort of a pejorative term in that period, too, if I recall.
Yeah, like you
kind of he stumped on, I'm not politically correct, and you shouldn't be either.
Right. Okay. And we also have to put the other aspect of this out there, too, which is social media.
Right.
I mean, social media did not exist really even in the early Obama end of the Bush, two administration. So this, new social media platform, this new discussion platform that's not politically correct or often factually correct right. is out there at the same time.
Right.
With all
wait, things on social media aren't always true.
I know. It's really hard to believe that, you know, as you're scrolling it, you know, scrolling it, you know, well, for you, it's probably like 7:30 p.m. before right. you go to bed.
If I see 8:30 p.m., I know I'm in trouble. Full disclosure, I get up at 4:30 in the morning. So
right, yes.
And I do need
a good, solid.
I have a face for podcasts, so you wouldn't know how much I need my beauty sleep.
Your beauty sleep. But yeah, those little, like headliners that are trying to grab you. No, they're not always accurate. So I would say that because of this culture that's kind of been created and the out to get you kind of mentality, if you criticize any of it, like when you talk about why President Trump's administration and his candidacy and his approach is so different, it is so different. You can get criticized as being anti that, anti Trump, anti the movement, when just even commenting on it, it's hard not to, as a political scientist, which I pride myself as being a scientist of politics, not a real scientist, a political scientist. You can't not talk about it.
Right.
But then if you say things that that sound critical, people think that you're, as a teacher, are, you know, indoctrinating or trying to convince people of changing their ideology, which has never been my attempt ever in the 20 years I've been an educator.
Right.
It's not my goal. But it's definitely created some challenges over the last few years and created definitely a polarization of thought and a polarization of people. But the joy I find in my job and the comfort I find in my job is that there's a lot more common ground in our student generation. What are they called? Are you guys called Zennial? What are they called?
I think
Gen Zs,
I'm
right?
I'm going to say Gen Z.
Are they yeah. the, you Gen Zs out there listening? Thanks for listening. But Gen Zs, I think, and even millennials, I think have a lot of common ideological ground that maybe other generations don't.
Sure.
But the generations that are running their government right now are, you know, the boomers, you know, and some of the, you know, Gen Xers that maybe don't necessarily agree in the same context right. that they do.
Right. So there's a generational thing going on.
I definitely think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And your students, I mean, have you seen, because 2016, I mean, it's almost half your career now. You've sort of dealt in this sort of political sphere, your teaching career, half of your teaching career in that sort of thing. You've taught government the whole time, haven't
you? I've always taught government, okay. yeah.
Mm-hmm. And your students, have you seen any sort of, I don't know, what's the word I'm looking for? Are they savvy to some of the things you talk about? I mean, do they have their own antenna up to listen for things? You know, I mean, kids love to note stuff. Like, do you feel like your kids are always like, okay, Miss Rue, is she conservative? Is she a liberal? And then how do you address that sort of thing?
The one thing I've been very glad about is I've always, I never identify my ideology within the class. That's something I actually made a conscious decision even years ago, that was never my attempt, because I do know the power of being influenced by somebody that you may grow to respect. And that was just a conscious decision, partially because when I was teaching in the beginning days, I was much younger than I am now. And I felt that, like, on a professional level, that it would be better to just leave, you know, politics out of the classroom, if right. you will, which is a very ironic thing to say, because politics are all over the classroom these days.
Right. And in government class.
Definitely. And they, I mean, I know for a fact that they probably are curious, and there's probably a lot of them that are like, oh, we know she's a diehard conservative. She talks about Grandpa George all the time, who's devout military guy who, you know, said the worst thing he ever did was vote for President Truman. And then there's the kid that's going to say, oh, no, she's the liberal because she talks about, you know, unions and, you know, President Trump, and she's criticizing what he does. You know, there's going to be evidence of both. And the right. reality is, I tell students, we're all a mixture of all ideologies. We're really to say that you are devoutly one ideological perspective, I've always argued, is almost impossible.
Sure.
It's almost impossible. My goal for students, though, is to understand ideology, their political beliefs. I like ideology better than like party identification for those of you that haven't taken government, or, you know, a little plug to take AP government next year. You probably think of it as political parties, Republicans and Democrats. I like to think of people on an ideological spectrum of belief, of thought. And that's the terms I like to use. What, how, you know, liberal, moderate, conservative is something that I prefer more just personally.
Right.
And I like students to know what it means, what those ideologies mean. Those ideologies have existed since democracies and dictatorships have existed.
Right.
I mean, those of you that are taking history know about fascism and socialism and communism. And while they may be economic systems mixed with political thinking, it's all part of ideology. So, but I'm sure that they want to know, and, you know, they're think, oh, they put something in the corner in a box each and every day based on something that I say. But, you know, it's about keeping the classroom neutral for that, you know,
right.
Keeping the classroom neutral and just keeping it on a conversation about what's going on. But I think students are very in tune to what's going on. And they see it a lot on social media.
Sure.
Yeah.
They see some of the best of it and certainly some of the worst of it.
And again, trying to fact check some of the stuff that's not true.
If it looks like it, maybe so.
I know.
It's hard.
And kind of scary. I mean, it's a little scary too because, you know, we do get consumed with our news and our information based on, and I know that as a research teacher too, you know, writing teacher, literature teacher, you're teaching about, you know, good primary fact-based sources when
right.
you're doing research and evidence-based writing.
Right.
I'm trying to do the same thing in the world of social sciences, but it's hard. It takes work. Like it takes work on all of us to know what the accurate sources are.
Right.
The right sources
It's harder every day.
And you can't, and trying to convince people that opinions aren't facts, you can are totally entitled to your opinion, but you don't get to declare it a fact in what you're learning about.
Right.
And that's hard.
Well, in an argument, writing, and in an everyday conversation, I'm sure you know this too, there's a difference between opinion and an informed opinion. You
right.
know, real evidence, that's great. But yeah, if you're not keyed into if your evidence is viable or not, is it real, where'd I get it from? You know, if you're getting all of your news from one particular source, it doesn't really matter what it is. It's like there's going to be a bent there of some kind, you know.
When news sources, I was listening to some kind of news source and someone said something about like putting on the jersey for the news source that you prefer. And I liked that. Is that a metaphor? Is that a simile? Which one is that, Mr. McHenry?
Yeah,
metaphorical, that like you root for your news source team is the image that was created. And I liked that because I know that people will reject news information or fact-based reporting or factual information from a source that they don't think is legitimate.
Yeah.
And as educators, trying to teach our students that that's not the right way to approach it, that sometimes you're going to have to do some reflection and say the very hardest thing that nobody likes to admit, which is you might be wrong about something.
Right. Yeah.
And teaching that all this time I thought, you know, the government was raising taxes or the government was lowering taxes, or the newest one out there is that, you know, most Americans think crime is at an all-time high.
Right.
And actually, in the last 3 years, we've seen a massive drop in mass murders and battery and assault against
right.
individuals. And if you look at the data that gets reported, you'll see that. But you turn on the news and all you see, like you said, is like, this happened, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, the world's falling apart. But factually, crime is down, which I think is a good thing.
News coverage is up, so it's everywhere. And so you see more examples of those things. But statistically, you know, like I just saw that same stat on crime, violent crime, I think in particular, is way down.
Way down, yeah. And with news being 24 hours a day, too, I mean, like, and not to, I mean, it's not even just 24-hour cable news now, it's 24-hour on their phones news, right? I mean,
right.
you carry the news in your pocket. But then also a real increase in people that don't consume news as much, like even with how readily available it is out there, news or information, you know, getting access to quality information. There's a lot of people that don't even look at it.
Yeah. You were teaching for the 2016 election and the 2020 election.
Yes.
Ostensibly, you'll be doing it again in the fall for the 2024. What's that atmosphere like? And do you think it'll have changed over those 12 years?
Yes. I mean, like, I'll be 100% honest with, you know, the listeners and you know this, like, I almost left the classroom because the idea of teaching the 2024 election was daunting and scary and exhausting. Yeah. Because I've been, you know, accused of being everything, you know, indoctrinating on this, you know, from the left, from the right, from the middle, from up, from down, you know, from a lot of misconceptions about, you know, teaching. So I definitely have been apprehensive about the election, not necessarily because I'm nervous about any particular candidate in like winning or losing or what have you. I understand our students' frustrations. We have two very old candidates in their mindset, right, in most people's mindsets. I mean, before either of these guys ever ran for office, the oldest president ever had been Reagan,
right,
at 60. Right. Well, when he left office, he was 69.
They're
right,
the oldest, you know, ever run in 2020.
Yeah. Also. Right. No, in 2020, they were the oldest. Now they're going to be the oldest.
They're adding to their own record.
And yeah, and kids don't maybe remember John McCain. I mean, he got lots of criticism for being in his like early 70s when he was thinking about running. Right. You know, so I get it. I get it feels like, you know, politics from a couple of grandpas and angry grandpas at that. And so I understand that frustration and the, you know, apathy that comes with that. But I definitely think that it's also for me historically, too. It's an interesting. We have never had two former presidents. Well, since 1892, this happened. You know, Grover Cleveland was 22nd and 24th president. So we had an example of, you know, over 100 years ago of somebody running and winning, Cleveland running and losing, running and winning, you know, again. But we have two people's records that you can look at, right? You have two candidates' records that you can look at, which will be, I think, I'm trying to like psych myself up, like, oh, that's a unique way to look at it, right? You've got a presidential record on President Trump from when he was in office. You got a presidential record from Biden when he's been in office. And that can help make informed decisions. But of course, with some of the legal issues going on with former President Trump, that's going to dominate the news too. It already is. Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about it in class as well. So it's just like I've been saying, everybody, to people like, oh, what do? I used to be, I'm a government teacher. Now I'm like, I teach social studies, because sometimes you just don't want to have to answer like, oh, how do you
know where you're headed?
You know where, like, oh, you get the looks. But I think you know this. I hope my students know this. I love what I do. And my job is, again, not to sway or persuade. It's just to teach students how to be involved in the government, how to be informed properly, you know, in a way to be educated with good sources, and then have what you believe match who you would vote for down the road. And I know it's getting harder and harder because what this generation cares about
sounds really straightforward.
It sounds straightforward, but what this generation cares about is not what other generations care about.
Right.
So, yeah, it'll be an interesting year. I mean, it will be. I mean, I always love the primary season. I've always loved it. And sadly, the primary season was over in like a day. You know, we didn't have hardly any sparks flying to talk about the candidates and talk about the quality of the candidates. And it just was sort of like, it's going to be Joe. It's going to be Donald. Yeah. You know, there it is, guys. Yeah. Here we are. But this generation is also into like redoing, you know, the repeats or the remakes of the classics, you know, although it's like, we'll just look at it as like a remake of 2020.
Some sort of vintage presidential run. Yeah.
But so, I mean, presidential elections are always interesting. You know, they come with lots of interesting things.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately it will show what I really will nerd out about is the power of voting. I mean, just ultimately at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, because you have seniors too. I mean, probably half your kids are voting age before they graduate.
Right.
And so.
Well, before the, yeah, I mean, November 5th will be, well, those early birds, but.
I was just thinking of every possible voting, you know. Right. But yeah, for presidential, that's right.
But even if you see it nationwide, I mean, you know, the predictions are that it's going to come down to some very close races in close states. And I promise you, if you have me in class next year, you will learn that, yes, it's possible to flip red states blue and blue states red, even with the Electoral College. It's just you got to show up and vote.
This has been real eye-opening for me. I'm curious, it'd be cool to have you come back next fall after the fallout of whatever happens. November, what is November 8th?
November 5th.
November 5th?
I'm pretty sure. First Tuesday, believe, after the first Monday in November in even years. Go look it up, everybody.
I would believe you.
I think it's November 5th.
If they actually make a decision on November 5th, to see sort of what that feels like in the classroom.
I would love to come back.
Well, good. Well, you know, we're just right down the hall. So.
You know where to find me.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Bora Pridecast. We're getting ready to head into the end of the year. Graduation is coming. We'll try and drop another episode soon. Thanks for listening. These are Bora Voices.